37, Chapinski versus St. Francis Hospital, and attorney Gerald J. Block will argue for the plaintiff appellant Susan Chapinski and Gary Chapinski. Block.
I get to follow Dina, I guess.
Right.
May it please the court, my name is Gerald Block. I am with the law firm of Borshovsky, Rotter, Tarnoff, Reinhardt, and Block of Milwaukee. And along with Edward Robinson, we represent the plaintiff appellant Susan and Gary Chapinski, who are the two adult children of appellant Chapinski, who died on October 20th, 1995, as a result of hospital negligence. There was no surviving spouse. This is an appeal from an order of Reserve Judge Cece granting defendant's motion to dismiss on the grounds that Helen's adult children could not pursue an action for the loss of their mother's society and companionship because, as Judge Cece interpreted Wisconsin law in effect at the time of their mother's death, adult children could bring no claim even if there was no surviving spouse. The Court of Appeals, in a fairly lengthy statement, which strongly suggests, I would say, that they would have reversed the trial court, properly, nevertheless, certified the question to this Supreme Court because of its importance, which certification was accepted. Briefs have been filed. We are relying on our brief filed in the Court of Appeals as we were given the option. The respondents have filed a new brief in the Supreme Court that is virtually identical to the Court of Appeals brief, almost verbatim, in fact, including the statement that oral argument is not warranted even after certification was granted. But I think this oral argument will give us an opportunity to try to explain why the trial court was correct for a series of reasons, at least four reasons, and how the issue of whether adult children can pursue a malpractice, how adult children can pursue a claim for loss of society and companionship in malpractice death cases has become confused by a series of Court of Appeals decisions and why a proper examination requires reversal.
Counsel, you indicate four reasons. I note that your opponent's brief, they say that you, although you raise due process, that you really don't argue it, and in a footnote they indicate that it should be waived. Are you pursuing a due process argument?
No, there is a due process equal protection argument, but it is the fifth reason, actually. There are four reasons why we should not get to that stage, and I will touch upon it briefly when we get there. But we are not waiving it. I think it is an appropriate equal protection argument that's being made here, and I'll summarize it, but I don't think we should ever get to that point.
Okay, but just for clarification, you're making a due process argument also?
I would call it more of an equal protection due process argument.
Okay, thank you.
The trial court's problem was in thinking that the Osdills had precedential value and that the legislature, when it amended the statutes in 1995 to make 655 subject to the wrongful death statute, somehow or other understood the Osdills to mean that adult children would not recover even after the statute was amended. And as I will point out, the Osdills and Ziulikowski, which was decided after the change in the law, but based on facts and arose before the change in the law, were superseded by the 1995 amendment making Chapter 655 cases subject to the wrongful death statute. And even if this court is not 100% convinced of this, I think I should be able to convince you that the Osdills and Ziulikowski were wrongfully decided because they assumed that somehow or other this court in prior decisions interpreted the meaning of child in Chapter 655 cases not to include adult children when the legislature never intended any such limitation. In order to understand the 1995 amendment and what the legislature sought to accomplish by amending the law, we need to start with this court's decision in Reinick versus Johnson, where in 1990 this court held that a minor child could bring a claim in a malpractice action for her mother's wrongful death, even if there was a surviving spouse. And the reason for the court's allowing that separate action on behalf of the child was because this court concluded that the legislature in passing 655 intended for all malpractice injury and death cases to be treated the same, and if the court had wanted the wrongful death limits to be in 655, it would have said so. So the Reiner court ruled that because the legislature did not incorporate the wrongful death statute, that evidenced a clear legislative intent not to apply the wrongful death restrictions. Had the legislature done so, of course, the child in Reiner could not have brought a claim for loss of her mother's society and companionship because her father was still surviving. Then in 1994, in Jelinek versus St. Paul Insurance Company, I had the opportunity to argue before this court the proposition that since the sunset provisions had gone into effect on the malpractice cap, that there were no longer any limits of any kind in malpractice death cases, especially the harsh restrictions of the wrongful death statute. And this court, in a unanimous decision, agreed. But again, in Reinick, as in Reinick, it was only a minor child that was involved, and the court held that, again, that there was a clear legislative intent to treat injury and death cases the same if they arise out of malpractice. Well, this court's decision in Jelinek set off a lobbying fervor, where physicians and hospitals complained to a different legislature that it was unfair that health care providers should be treated differently than any other tortfeasor whose conduct kills children. And much of that argument is set forth in the appendix, in the reply brief, and that's public record, that's not disputed. The whole purpose of promoting this change was to provide for equality in death cases, and that it was unfair for physicians and hospitals to be treated differently. The legislative response to this plea was the enactment in 1995 of Section 893.554F, which specifically states that effective May 25, 1995, cases arising under Chapter 655 will now be subject to the wrongful death statute, Section 895.04(4). This changes everything. There should not be any confusion as to what the legislature meant when it passed 893.554F and specifically stated that henceforth malpractice cases are subject to 895.044. Now, I have...
They didn't quite say that, did they?
I think they did.
I think the statute says subject to the limit under 895.044.
One cannot take a single phrase out of a subsection. The limit applies in 895.04 not only to the amount of recovery, but to who can claim. There is a limit within 895.044 as to who can make a claim. And to take a phrase, it isn't even a separate sentence. It's a phrase out of a sentence. In fact, I have provided, because I wasn't going to be able to use blow-ups, in this yellow page is a compilation of the records. It is the only statute that deals with loss of society and companionship. And it says additional damages not to exceed whatever the pertinent amount is, because it changes a lot, for loss of society and companionship may be awarded to the spouse, children, or parents. So it seems absurd to take out a phrase of a sentence when the legislature is saying we're making this subject to the limit of 895.04, because the limit of 895.04 is not just a monetary limit, it provides who can recover. It's all one sentence. And
go ahead, please. I'm sorry, I have a question, but I just wanted to ask in that same vein, and then if that is true, in which you accept in reading your yellow handout here. My question goes to this. If we're looking at legislative intent, and I know that your opposing counsel points out that in 1997, which was Senate Bill 148, which then proposed to, and this is, of course, under 655.07, and proposed to define child as including both adult and minor. So we're talking about legislative intent. We're going back to 95, but how would one explain the fact that a legislature in 97 proposed exactly what you're believing was done back in 95?
Because one legislator who had a constituent problem felt that the Court of Appeals decisions were causing problems and he wanted to change it. But obviously the legislature did not feel it needed to be changed, because the term child in legislation means child unless stated otherwise. In fact, this court It's in a state of McDonald, 20 Wisconsin, second 63, and it's in Callahan's Wisconsin Digest, volume 17A. This court has used and said, what does children mean? And it says, unless it's obscured in some other way, it means descendants of human parents in the first degree. That means if you're 5 or 30 or 40 or 50. And the other thing that's important, Justice Wilcox, in response to what you asked, is when the statute was in fact amended, the amendment that took place was to add minor siblings. They made it clear that siblings, starting in 1997, would have a claim subject to proof. All of this is subject to proof. But they left the term children. They didn't say minor children. 895.044 itself is an example of why children means children. Originally, 895.04 talked about unemancipated and dependent children. And then in 1985, the legislature removed that from the statute. So they meant children, and children are children.
Well, counsel, I want to stay on this limit because I think that's the weakest part of your case, and that's where you need to convince me. Because when I look at that statute, 4F, the question obviously is whether the term limit applies only to damages or applies to damages in children. If you follow the F, it says subject to the limit under 895.04, and then it immediately goes on to say, if damages in excess of the limit. Now, obviously, they're speaking solely of damages there. And then at the end of that sentence, it says, shall award the lesser of the reduced amount or the limit under 895.04, and that obviously refers to damages. And so you're saying, you're going to have to really persuade me, because two out of three clearly refer to damages.
In this, they're dealing with the language in Reinick that got withdrawn in Chang, and they want it subject to the contributory negligence or to the cap first and then reduced for contributory negligence. But I don't think, Justice Babbage, if you read what the legislature said, the doctors and the people who were proponents of this legislation had one clear and intent purpose. It is obvious from reading it. They wanted equality in wrongful death cases from their constituents, doctors, hospitals, healthcare providers. They never came in and said, hey, let's give us a benefit. Just take away this disadvantage that we're having. And if there, you know, one of the problems is also with regard to subsection 2. And the trial court, and I think the respondents in their brief keep saying this, that as the circuit court recognized, the legislature did not incorporate sub 2 of 895.04, which sets forth who is a claimant, when it spoke to the limits of sub 4. That completely misses the point, because there isn't a single thing. And unfortunately, I didn't give you a copy of 895.04.2, but I hope and I know you will read it. There is nothing in 895.04.2 that has anything to do with the definition of children being limited to minors.
Counsel, Justice Babbage, I think, raises a very important focus, and I'd like to stay with that focus. The focus is the language concerning limitation. And what does limitation or limit mean in 893.55.4F? Let's look at that language, because you responded by what the doctors testified to, and that I thought was an excellent part of your brief. But I want to look at the not what they testified to, but what the legislature said.
The language is that additional damages, not to exceed whatever the amount is, keep changing, may be awarded, and who it may be awarded to.
Well, let's look at the language. When it says, for wrongful death, I think the first time the word limit is, second time it's used, is for wrongful death are subject to the limit under 895.04. What is the limit in your position that the words the limit is referring to?
The limit refers to a dollar amount and to a category of people who can take.
Now, I know that's your argument, and I need help from you on this argument. Because the very next sentence, normally if I'm writing something and I use a word, often if I define it in the next sentence, that's the definition. And the next sentence, as Justice Babbage pointed out, is, if damages in excess of the limit. Do you agree that they're dealing then with a dollar amount of limit?
With that limit, yes, they're dealing with a dollar amount.
And then the next time, are found, the court shall make any reduction required under 895.045 and shall award the lesser of the reduced amount or the limit. Now, is that also dealing with a dollar amount?
Yes, that is.
Why do you think the legislature used are subject to the limit rather than limits, if you're saying there are two limits under 895.04?
Well, because you have to look at it in the context of the paragraph. It's just like if you're trying to define the terms or and, they don't have a meaning. You have to look at what is it intended to construe.
I know, that's my problem. In the context of the paragraph, the very next sentence that defines limit only defines it in terms of monetary. So you're going to have to help me with that. Where do you see in this sub F a definition of limit as to classification or suggestion that we're talking about the plural limits rather than what is used in the language of sub F, the limit?
Because if you look at the term wrongful death, don't overlook the term wrongful death as it's contained in there and just focus on the dollar limit. The wrongful death recovery is subject to a dollar limit, and it's subject to a class of people. I mean, I realize this is what the problem is, but when you look at it in the context of what was intended to be done, it shouldn't be a problem.
Well, let me try it a different way. The cross-reference is to all of subsection 4?
Yes.
Well, let's look at it. Is 4A a limit? Not a dollar amount. It defines non-economic damages. Does that apply?
Well, 893554F just says 4.
That's right. So A then applies? The reference is to all of 4, right?
Yes.
You mean all of sub... I'm not sub...
All of subsection 4. At the cross-reference? Am I looking at the wrong statute?
344.
Yeah. Okay. And what's in it? Yeah. And what's the reference to non-economic damages?
It's to spouse, children, or parents of the deceased.
All right. And what does 893.55 help you?
Well, 893.55 before the legislation did not have the fact that it was
limit.
Subject. Did not have
okay.
That it was subject. I mean, the whole purpose of this was to make six. The whole purpose of this was to overrule what you did in Jelinek and Reinick. They didn't like it.
Okay.
But they never for a moment is there anything in any of the case law that suggests that once that statute was passed, that it's now going to give them an advantage, because there's no reason for that advantage. And again, I wanted to point out in sub two, when the court said that the trial court. The respondent says, as the circuit court recognized, the legislature did not incorporate sub 2 when it set forth who is a claimant. There'd be no reason to incorporate sub 2 because that doesn't even address loss to society and companionship cases. All that does is set forth a hierarchy of how assets are preserved in a survivorship action, in economic loss actions, and it describes the hierarchy of who takes. And there's certainly nothing in sub 2 that would suggest that adult children cannot recover. There are a couple of comments. In other words, to ignore this last phrase of 895.04, Justice Babbage, defeats the entire purpose of 893.55.4F to bring about equality. The court, two comments in the Court of Appeals statement on certification seem really instructive. They said the Chapinskys correctly point out that neither Diazdos nor Zulikowski considered whether 893.55.4F stats confers upon an adult child the right to bring a claim for loss of society and companionship of an adult who dies as a result of malpractice. The Ziados case and the accrual of Zulikowski preceded the enactment of that statute. So, and I realize that I don't know a lot.
If the legislature was trying to limit, it seems to me you're making the argument that the legislature admittedly was trying to limit the amount that could be recovered based upon those prior cases, but at the same, simultaneously, was increasing the number of people eligible for recovery.
No, but they were also decreasing it because under the new statute, the children in Reinick and Jelinek who were allowed to recover are no longer able to recover because there is a surviving spouse. Okay, so there was this give and take, and there was no doubt, as one reads this, what was intended here. The intent was to make death cases in malpractice cases just like any other death case caused by a manufacturer or a truck driver. There is no, I mean, that should be the end of the story. And I have to jump quickly, but the other reason that the trial court was wrong is Zulikowski and Diazdos somehow or other assumed that this court in Reinick and Jelinek defined what children meant under 655.007. This court never did that. One, because it didn't have to, because they were minor children, and somehow, and then there was this discussion about Shockley and FEMA and the common law, but those were injury cases. Those were not death cases subject to the death statute. And if some point that has to be revisited, as Justice Wells suggests, as Justice Abrahamson suggested in Wells, I mean, that's a story for a different day. But none of those cases no longer have any relevancy to this issue because this court has never interpreted the term child to be limited to minors. And if for some reason Ziados and Zulikowski think they have, those cases are wrong and they should be overruled. A child is a child is a child. There are some policy arguments that are set forth in the respondent's brief that I do not think are particularly significant, particularly when worried about the availability of the health care liability system and runaway liability. Remember that we're doing this in the context of already strict death limits. Death limits in amount that are much less than the primary policy which health care providers have to have under 655. With regard to, so, I mean, what about the policy? If there's a single policy, what about the policy that allows a physician or a hospital who kills an adult person without a spouse and no minor children that there be no recompense for anyone? That's a large part of the population in this day and age. And to suggest that the emotional loss of adult children is without some meaning is just is somewhat ludicrous. As I said, I do not think it should be necessary to reach this case on a constitutional decision. The third reason is, and I think it goes to what you're saying, Justice Babbage, a statute is to be construed to avoid constitutional infirmities. A statute is to be construed to make sense out of what was going on in the context of the history and what the legislature did. But any law, so even if we had to get to that point, any law that allows an adult child to recover for the loss of society and companionship of a death against anybody but a health care provider, where recovery in any event is so severely limited, seems to have no rational basis, is impermissible and invidious in the deprivation of equal protection. And how public interest can be furthered by such an invalid distinction is not unanswerable. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Block. And arguing, and you have 5 minutes of rebuttal, sir.
Thank you.
Arguing for the defendant respondent, St. Francis, is John Nelson.
May it please this honorable court, Mr. Block. I'm John Nelson. I represent St. Francis Hospital, its insurer, American Continental Insurance Company, excuse me, and the Wisconsin Patients Compensation Fund. We request that this court affirm Judge Cece's order dismissing plaintiff's complaint and holding that adult children are precluded from recovering damages for loss of society and companionship in a medical negligence action. In summary, we request that this court affirm this decision on the basis of and the consistency with clear Wisconsin precedent, the plain meaning of Section 893.554F, which incorporated 895.044 to discuss the limits, meaning the dollar amount only, and not the class of people entitled to participate. Further, Judge Cece's order was consistent with the subsequent actions of the legislature and also is consistent with the public policy issues supporting exclusion of such claims by adult children, more recently affirmed in a similar case in the Wells case.
Well, if you don't give it to the adult children, who gets the wrongful death non-economic damages here?
Justice Abramson, I think there is no recovery,
in that
specific instance.
Why not?
Because I think that becomes a public policy issue.
Where in the statute does that show?
Well, for the same reason that in Wells, a parent could not receive recompense for the loss of an adult child, I think the same arguments are completely applicable here. I think this court has said on numerous times that indeed sometimes the rules that we set down may seem harsh. And indeed, I think this is the type of case where it may seem harsh, but yet the court frequently has said, but a line has to be drawn at some point to preclude the unnecessary proliferation of liability for tortfeasors. So I think in that
vein. What's the unnecessary proliferation of tortfeasors in this case when you have adult children and the allegation, which is as yet unproved, right?
Yes, we have denied the allegations.
Right. That the grown children cannot recover when for loss of companionship, right, in society, in medical malpractice. What's the proliferation of cases?
Well, I think I can best address that by what was stated in the Wells case, again, Your Honor.
Okay.
My recollection of Wells is that it clearly stated that there's a conflict or a tension between expanding liability under one of the categories under the public policy arguments as deemed in Coffey versus Milwaukee, I think was
right.
The case.
Okay.
And to reward the other side of that is the tension to reward people for losses. And the court held that with respect to that, that clear public policy intervened, drawing the line at the age of majority, because the minor, well, I guess it gets back to the concept of the nuclear family, which, as I understand it, this court has defined as essentially spouse or spouse losses or losses between parents and their minor children or vice versa.
But 18, you don't have a loss at the loss of a
Well,
parent.
Of course you have a loss, Justice Abramson. Without doubt, I think that was also addressed in Wells.
But let me ask you this. How can you separate out limit with the people that are entitled to recover when you read F?
I think Justice Abramson...
You'd have to assume that the legislature intended to bring in all of these prior cases and just say all of those are still in effect, we're just putting a dollar amount. Is that your argument?
I suggest that's what the plain meaning of the legislative's words are, correct. I think you must go back and start with 655.017, who talks about limitation on non-economic damages. in that section, it refers to non-economic damages being subject to the limits under 893.55.4 D and F. Of course, with respect to D, the legislature saw fit in an injury case to proclaim that $350,000 would be the total loss of for non-economic damages. Likewise, in a where death occurred as a result of medical malpractice, they then inserted sub F of 893.55.4, and again, I think the clear pattern, Justice Abramson, is that we're talking about dollar amounts for non-economic damages, and indeed they did incorporate 895.044 to the limits, and subject to the limit, and I think that's what the legislature meant to do. Mr. Block, in his argument, has suggested that what the physicians wanted was to be treated equally, and I think that's what the legislature did by suggesting or determining that a death has a certain amount of value, which is a public policy issue with the legislature, and they felt that why should a physician who causes a death be subject to a higher limit than what the normal wrongful death. I think
but
that's
counsel,
the hierarchy.
If you agree that the rationale was for the doctors to be treated equally, then how can you justify the unequal treatment of injury for injuries sustained by other than medical malpractice? In other words, if your adult child was injured in an automobile accident, you can recover. Am I not correct? I mean, isn't there a disparity here?
Well, I'm having a little trouble, Justice Bradley, because you'll see in our brief that we put a footnote about children under the wrongful death statute. And to my research, and frankly to people that can do research better than I, we have yet to find a case that says under the wrongful death statute, adult children are included in the category that can receive damages for loss of society and companionship. And that's
well,
and that's different than under sub 2, whereas lineal descendants, they have a right to recover pecuniary damages.
That gets back to your definition in sub F in the legislative history argument, doesn't it? I mean, doesn't, in other words, the legislative history argument with regard to sub F, I'm remembering
of
correctly, deals with the whole discussion, I'm sorry, not sub F, 895.044 deals with the discussion of adding in siblings and minor siblings.
Yes, it does.
And not adding in minor children.
Yes, Justice Bradley. And I think what's important in the subsequent legislation is that it shows that when the legislature wants to include a certain category, they know how to do it. And in that case, they included minor siblings. And they made a respective change in 655.007 to reflect that.
Well, if they only wanted minor children, then why didn't they put the word minor in front of children?
Well, the way I can only answer that, Justice Bradley, is I think it falls under the grammatical rule of ellipsis, which minor refers to both the nouns that that follow.
Well, maybe I'm looking at the wrong year of the statute. I have 1997-98, but children or parents of the deceased. I mean, in the legislative history as set forth in the briefs, it discussed the change to minor siblings. I mean, certainly the legislature knows how to qualify and use the word minor because they did.
I don't think the grammatical rule you stated applies here. It did apply to an earlier version which said minor siblings and children or children. And then you could say maybe minor referred to children. But here it says children or parents of the deceased or to the siblings of the deceased, comma, if the siblings were minors at the time of death.
So, I mean,
so that doesn't work. It did work in an earlier version.
So how do you respond to that? I mean, sometimes you can say, with all due respect, well, maybe the legislature just, I don't even want to say forgot, or didn't remember that it could use the word minor. But here, they say it very precisely and very clearly. If the siblings were minors at the death, at the time of death, they don't make such qualification for children. So if not, why not?
I think that would relate to one of the basis for Judge Cece's decision in the trial court, and that was that the legislature is presumed to know how words were interpreted by this court and the Court of Appeals. And I think that's what Judge Cece found, that indeed, by the precedent of Zeidelis and Zielikowski, that indeed a construction as to children had been established.
But your opposing counsel makes the argument, sure, there are those cases, and the Wells case that you just discussed,
yes,
all deal with 895.04 sub 4, which has been subsequently modified since those cases were decided or the causes of action accrued. Their response is, so, I mean, how can you rely on precedent interpreting a statute when that statute has been subsequently changed in relevant part? How do you respond?
Well, I can only say that the legislature, in adding the phrase with respect to minor children, where it's quite specific in doing so. I can only just reiterate what I said before. I can only assume that the legislature had knowledge, and they're presumed to have that knowledge with respect to the interpretation of the statute before that, and would not need to change that.
Counsel, I asked opposing counsel this question. As far as in your brief, you talk about this 1997 amendment, which talks about including both adult and minor children. Opposing counsel seemed to indicate that, therefore, if you take this argument and there was a proposed change to both adult and minor, that basically that was just one or two legislators that wanted to make that change. Is that the thrust of your legislative argument, that they already knew that child meant child under 18 and therefore it wasn't necessary? Is that?
I think that's part and parcel, Justice Wilcox, that when that was raised in the 1997 Senate Bill 148, the mere fact that someone saw fit to raise that to include that children mean adult and minor children suggests that the legislature itself had not come to conclusion, or no one had believed that children was anything other than minor children to that point. And I think the fact that that phrase, if indeed the legislature had intended earlier to include adult children under the definition of children in the statutes, certainly would not have been rejected the way it was. So I think that only adds to our argument that the legislature, by reviewing the subsequent legislation, indeed affirms that it was not the intent at the time of the earlier law change under 893.554F, incorporating 895.044, that adult children were included in that categorization. So I think it does affirm our argument in that respect.
Counsel, is 895.04 sub 4 ambiguous?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's only ambiguous if one were to say that there's an ambiguity as to what children mean.
Well, then, if you think it is ambiguous, would you highlight for me or refer me to the word or phrase or phrases that you think are ambiguous in some form?
I think one could argue that children alone is the ambiguous word in that legislation. But again, I think that's got to be seen in the context of clear Wisconsin precedent and changes in the law and the subsequent changes.
That's why I asked the question in the way that I do. One argument can be made is that if it is clear and unambiguous, we just look to the words, and if they are clear and unambiguous, then we don't have to try to divine whether or not the legislature had in mind the Wells case and the other two cases that you've referred to, but we can look to the language of the statute to discern intent. So it isn't clear to me by looking at the language of the statute why the word children is ambiguous.
Let me suggest, Justice Bradley, that one need not get to that because what is clear and unambiguous is the reference in 893.55.4f to limit. And that seems unassailable. It seems clear. It seems that for all the questions that had gone forth between Justice Babich and my esteemed colleague, if there's one thing that's clear, I think that's what's clear. And I don't therefore, I guess. I think the legislature, if Mr. Block is right, had wanted to include the entirety of the wrongful death action, making wrongful death outside the scope of 655 or within the scope of the wrongful death statute, it would have said so. I think the number one, the introduction to Act 10, which prepared the language of 893.55.4f, was to limit non-economic damages in medical malpractice actions. And again, as we stated in our brief, 1995 Wisconsin Act 10 did not make any changes to Section 655.007 with respect to the class of claimants. It would have been very easy for the legislature, if they had intended to incorporate the entirety of the Wrongful Death Act, to simply say so. But if they did so, under Mr. Bach's argument before this court, we would see some inconsistencies. One of the inconsistencies we would see is, by virtue of Reinick, Jelinek, Wells, they have all said that the clear legislative intent under Chapter 655 was to remove medical negligence from other tort actions. The things that would come up is that by virtue of this incorporation of 895.044, if Mr. Block is correct, it would provide a far broader category in death cases for people who could recover than in non-death cases or injury cases under Chapter 655. It further would show up the conflict that Justice Babich noted in the Reinick decision about how to utilize the comparative negligence statute, because under the wrongful death statute, 504, I believe it's 7, there's a different way in which contributory negligence is assessed with respect to damage awards.
Just to interrupt you a minute. I just want to go back, track out the statutes.
If you can.
655.017, which is effective as of May 25, 1995. Does that cover this case? Does this case arose after 95?
Yes, it does.
It says that the amount of non-economic damages recoverable, this was like driving out before, recoverable by a claimant is subject to the limits of 893.55(4)(D) and (F), right?
Correct.
Okay. And everybody's been concerned about limits. Does 4A apply to your case? 4A defines non-economic damages.
Hold it, please.
893.55(4A). Does that apply?
Yes, I believe it does, Justice Abrams.
Does B apply? Because I'm going to go right down all of these, all through C and D. D is a limit on money, but the other parts talk about jury findings, what happens. E talks about bodily injury, economic damages. F talks about non-economic. D, non-economic. C, non-economic. B, non-economic. And A. Do they all apply?
Yes.
Well,
clearly.
Then what is the meaning of is subject to the limits under 893.55(4)(D) and (F) when the whole four applies, in your opinion?
Because the legislature deemed it appropriate to prescribe a certain dollar limitation.
I know, but why didn't it just, in a prior reference, it just said four, right? It says 655.017 is subject to limit under section 893.554. Now it says it's subject to limit of D and F. Does that matter?
It only matters whether
do we know what non-economic damages means? Does it mean something other than 4A?
No, I believe under the statute,
so
one would have to conclude it was...
Yeah, that's what bothers me about this cross-reference. Cross-reference, you're trying to lead it, to read as being very, very limited to just a dollar amount, whereas, in effect, maybe all of 4 covers.
I guess that
what
gets,
have I missed?
I guess that gets us back to what the legislature meant by our subject to the limit. And I think if one looks at the succession of cases, including Reinick and Jelinek,
right.
It becomes clear, at least to this humble lawyer, that that's what the legislature's intent was.
But I wanted to know if you had another explanation for why there is...
I'm afraid.
This dichotomy of the cross-reference and what is really applicable.
I don't.
And it's under, as I see it, 655.07. No, yes, 655.007, where you want to move minor to be minor sibling or minor child. And that 655.007 says on or after July 24, 1975, any patient or patient's representative having a claim, or any spouse, parent, minor sibling, or child of the patient having a derivative claim for injury or death on account of malpractice is subject to this chapter. Well, if you read that to be, and let's see if that's still in the statutes. Yes, it is. If so, then an adult child doesn't come under 655.
I don't know where to get you, but it's not under 655. You see what I mean?
I think I'm following you, Justice Abramson.
Good, because I don't know that I was following me.
Well, I sometimes have difficulty. Yeah. The same problem with myself.
God.
Also, if I may, you were... you were...
There's far too many numbers involved sometimes.
I know. Yeah.
You were pointing out discrepancies or conflicts earlier, and I noted page 9 and 10 of the reply brief, or maybe, I guess, 9 in the reply brief, it says, is it not equally ludicrous, and that was in terms of commenting on conflicts in response to you, is it not equally ludicrous to permit an adult child to recover damages for the loss of the society and companionship of a parent killed by a negligent driver, negligently manufactured product, etc., but to deny an adult child's claim for damages for the loss of society and companionship of a parent killed by a negligent health care provider? Of course it is. That's the quote. That makes sense to me. It makes... I think there's a certain amount of ludicrous suggestion. How can you respond to that?
I guess I could only state that in the law, sometimes results are harsh. And I guess I mentioned before the Wells case, where they mentioned that, does it seem ludicrous that someone can recover for someone who dies at age 17 and yet 2 days later not recover when they're now 2 days after age 18? I guess in the sense of justice, something seems wrong, but in the kind confines of the law and legislative wisdom and wisdom of the common law, the lines have to be drawn. And I think I'll harken back to a couple cases, the Strykowski case that said, we believe, the legislature believes that 655 should be treated, and medical negligence action should be treated differently than other tort actions. And Harris v. Kelly, which had much of the same, perhaps, innate injustice that you seem to find, and I think generally I could agree with that, but in that case they talked about who could recover, whether non-emancipated minor and dependent adult children could recover, while emancipated and non-dependent children were precluded. And they founded their decision on the difference in the degree of the dependence upon and the implied closeness of the relationship to the deceased. I think that's been implicit in this court's decisions in FEMA, all the way through most of the cases as recently as 1999 in the Conant, with the Court of Appeals. So while yes, there's some facial harshness to a clean line of majority, I think that's the weighing and balancing that the legislature went through and determined should be applied, as well as this court. I guess my time is up. Thank you very much.
We have a few moments. Are there any other questions? Hearing none, Mr. Nelson, thank you very much. Mr. Block?
Thank you, Your Honor. It is a dangerous thing to draw any conclusions about what a statute meant from a proposal that failed amendment. This is not a reliable indication of prior legislation or intent, and I think that's something that Professor Hirst used to talk about. And it is totally speculative. Maybe that bill was defeated simply because somebody didn't like the sibling clause in it. If we're going to look at it, then the fact that the legislature inserted the term minor before sibling in that section speaks volumes about whether the term child in 655.007 means only minor children. It obviously does not. The legislature is presumed to know what the term child means, as the courts have used it. And as I said before, and I made reference to a state of McDonald, 20 Wisconsin, Second 63, the term child has always meant a descendant of the first degree unless otherwise modified. I want to make one comment about a state of Wells because it's confusing. The claim for loss of society and companionship in the state of Wells was not for her death. It was from the time this devastated child was injured for the 3.5 years until she died. So no statute, the wrongful death statute did not come into play in that case. It was an injury case. And what's and what is a little confusing about that is that this court in its opinion said that Chapter 655 is silent as to who can maintain such a claim and under what conditions. And really, 655 is not silent. It says who can maintain a claim in 655007. So I'm not sure where that language comes from. I appreciate the concerns of those who raise the question of limit. However, that section also states damages for wrongful death. And wrongful death is a creature of statute. It is contained in 895.04. And what you can't understand what the legislature means by wrongful death damages without looking to the statute. And even though it says limit, it also says damages for wrongful death. So it is ambiguous as to what it means. I don't think it's ambiguous, but if anything, it's ambiguous. I understand why it's considered ambiguous, but then what do? You look to the purpose of it. What was the legislative intent? The intent was to overrule all of those other cases that held wrongful death cases inapplicable to Chapter 655 cases. And this is what the legislature did. To do anything else would bring about a completely absurd and unintended result, and a result that would be constitutionally impermissible, and that can be clarified through the construction that we are suggesting. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Block. Thank you, Mr. Nelson. That concludes our argument in the first case. The court will recess again so that our next lawyer will be able to warm up the audience on the second case and allow those who are leaving